Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Just when you thought it couldn't get worse, we're going to bring you some really bad news. This is The Media Project, a half hour of commentary and analysis and a lot more. Here I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Hi, Rex.
Hey, I just realized I misintroduced myself. I'm Rex Smith, editor-at-large of the Times Union. Ira Fussfeld, the publisher emeritus of the Kingston Daily Freeman.
Thank you. I could be also described as large, but I won't.
Not at large.
Not by me.
And no. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, professor, how are you?
Good. Good. Very good. Not large.
Not large.
You're not large.
Nope. That's true. Okay. We promised that we'd say just when things couldn't get worse. I think Radio Sputnik, a propaganda arm of the Russian government taking over airwaves in Kansas City, is pretty bad news. People don't realize that when they're listening to talk radio in Kansas City, Missouri, they may well be getting, let's say, Russian disinformation. They may well be getting an arm of the Russian government, which sounds surprisingly a lot like American talk radio, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is part of the effort to further divide the country, part of the effort to make people question the validity of any reporting of anything they hear. It is an assault on the free press, actually.
I'm unclear as to why this is allowed on the air. Where is the FCC? The owners apparently are not being hidden. It's described in the story that we're seeing as a propaganda arm of the Russian government. How do they get a license to broadcast in this country? Or is it anything goes because we have the First Amendment?
Yeah. Right. The license is held by a private enterprise. It's just that the private enterprise is getting paid by the Russian government to carry this stuff. The Russian government pays, what, $49 per hour for the airtime, and the owner of the station gets $27.50 per hour of that. So he's happy to sell, right?
Well, of course, anybody hearing this story is going to think about Donald Trump saying he loves the Russians, and he's very close to Putin. And as the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, puts it, with Trump, all roads lead to Putin. And since we do know that we are beset by tons of stories about how the people in the government are following the whims and wishes of the president, it sounds to me like one and one makes two.
Yeah. You don't think that there is going to be any action, right, out of the government to limit this?
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, the thing that worries me, of course, is that they got on by taking advantage of exploiting American freedom. You know, there's a wide range given under the First Amendment by design to political discourse, which this falls into. So what is the fix? Is it clamping down on the free press? It doesn't seem that Americans win either way. You have Russian propagandists on the one hand, or you have a closed broadcast system on the other.
Right. And this comes as the president is, of course, attacking the free press all the time, and it comes as there is a new survey indicating that Americans who get most of their political news on social media display less confidence in the public's acceptance of election results. That is, if you closely follow political news on traditional media, you'll have more confidence in the reality of the results. If you're following social media, which we know is more vulnerable than traditional media to disinformation, you're not going to trust that our democracy actually is working.
The article that we read on Radio Sputnik talks about some of the things that are being spewed over the station, and which, of course, we also see reflected in social media, and it's that the deep state is real and evil and must be removed, the media is irredeemable, and the country is divided in two, which, of course, it allows you to exploit the divisions even more. So it's propaganda, it's effective, and it's built on things that are have a basis in truth.
And the
so
best,
it's troubling.
And the best thing that money can buy.
Right.
I was struck, as you said, Rosemary, I think it was you, about the defense. And the defense from the owner of the station was, hey, I'm getting paid for it, as if that's enough.
Right.
Speaking of what money can buy, and just while we're getting all the bad news out first here, right, a respected newspaper chain has filed for bankruptcy. McClatchy, which owns 30 American daily newspapers, including such impressive titles as the Kansas City Star and the Miami Herald, McClatchy is now filing for bankruptcy. They can't meet their pension payments and other things. And it is then the company is going to be taken over by a hedge fund.
Yet another hedge fund. And so my question to you, Rex and Rosemary and Ira, because I really don't remember all this. McClatchy went around buying up newspapers, right?
They did.
That's the problem. In 2006, they ate up this much bigger group, Knight Ridder, and they have never been able to come out from under the burden of that debt because that coincided with the growth of digital reporting. And, you know, you can't make up that money that you've lost in print advertising in digital because 3/4 of the revenue for digital advertising goes to two places, Google and Facebook.
So the question then is, were they being stupid? In other words, somebody was running this company, McClatchy, and somebody was saying, we can make some money here and we can be productive. And it turns out they couldn't. So what's the deal?
It came from hope.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of my predecessor parent companies when I was working in Kingston purchased us and other newspapers in our former group for, I believe, $400 million. And they took a bet. They bought while the business was good, and they presumed the business was going to continue to be good. So to your question, Alan, are they stupid? I don't know if it's stupid is the right word, but certainly they miscalculated and did not view the future as well as they should. And the question I have about all of these stories, and there are a litany of them regarding hedge funds, and is the newspapers themselves that are purchased by the hedge funds, particularly my former company, which is purchased by Alden or is now run by Alden, there are journalists at those papers trying to solicit other people to buy their newspapers to get them from out from under the hedge funds. Well, guess what? They're not succeeding. So what does it say to you that the only people who want to buy newspapers now are hedge funds?
I think there was a period of optimism in, around the mid-2000s, and McClatchy was one of them. Warren Buffett bought a whole bunch of newspapers, and the view was that, oh, things will turn around, we're going to change, or media is too needed, and we've seen consistently that that's not proven true.
And including by Buffett himself, who's finally sold his property.
Exactly.
Yeah. It is a continuing trend, of course. More than 2,000 newspapers have ceased production entirely in the last 15 years. So the best you can hope for, I think, is you might get local entrepreneurs, local versions of Jeff Bezos of the Washington Post, who might step in to buy the papers to try to keep them alive in their communities, thinking that as a one-off, they might be able to make enough money to have the enterprise succeed.
So is that the idea? The idea is that when the hedge fund buys it, that we see an opportunity to sort of strip it out and sell it off.
I would love it if that would be the case, but that hasn't been the model that Zyra was referring to. Alden Global Capital, who took over his old chain, they haven't sold it. They're just gutting the places, yeah, right?
They've sold a couple of smaller pieces, but there just is not enough interest in newspapers and smaller newspapers, whereas you'd think they'd be more attractive because of the unique content in smaller newspapers. They're still very expensive to run, and the advertising dollars are not there. By the way, I saw a startling statistic. Maybe you did, too. As a result of all the layoffs of reporters, 1 in 5 of every journalist in this country now works for either the Washington Post, the New York Times, and there was a third. But there was three. No, the Wall Street Journal, I guess, might have been the third. It's 20% of all the journalists in this country print daily newspapers work for those three.
So that's where it's going, right? The end, we're going to see the Washington Post, the New York Times, survival of the fittest, and probably the Wall Street Journal as the tentpoles of the newspaper industry.
But those are national publications.
Right.
They're the only national publications. And what that means for local journalism is that town boards and school boards and planning commissions are not going to be covered. And we're going to have a loss of accountability that has really sustained democracy.
We're going to have a surge in corruption is what we're going to have. Unwatched, all of the old tricks will come back again. Expense accounts will be padded. Salaries will be given without merit or accountability. It's a frightening thing.
And meanwhile,
nothing has replaced it.
Yeah, nothing
has replaced local coverage. Nothing.
Right. It hasn't. And so that's the local view. On the national scene, of course, the president's continuing attack on the independent media is certainly paying off. That's not going to stop.
When you say paying off, what do you mean?
It's paying off in the decline in confidence in the validity of the journalism that's being produced. It suggests that Americans of all stripes no longer trust at all what they hear from mainstream media. I was just this week visiting the LBJ Presidential Library in Austin, Texas, and I was quite taken by some of the video there of Walter Cronkite, for example, delivering the news and the impact that that had. Now, this was not a perfect model that we ever existed in. Of course, we were all susceptible to these few messages. There was the lack of diversity in the media, the national reporting, of course, because it was three major television networks telling us everything. But, you know, we had confidence that what we were being told was largely true.
Interesting, because, you know, Rex, I only watch CNN and MSNBC, so I couldn't tell you who the present-day Walter Cronkites are. Not that there are any, but who's running those programs now? Amazing. Rex, I'd like to raise a subject for the day. Is that possible?
Let's vote on it. let's let him do
three
it.
Three to one. 3-1 vote.
3-1, and you win. The one vote holds it. What's that, Alan? You want to step away from this one? That's fine. We're good.
Okay.
What do you want to do?
Let me talk for a moment, if I can. We've been very lucky at WAMC. The governor likes to come on to WAMC. We don't know what his motives are, but he does like to come on to WAMC. We think that this is an area, frankly, that he needs. And we also think that he comes on because it offers him, you know, some fun. Fun, because I do the interviews, and we have some fun, but I'm as tough with him as I possibly can be. Now, others will have to decide about that, and that's Governor Cuomo, of course. Well, while this is going on, there's tweeting going on between all the reporters who are listening to the interview, which, of course, they have to do because they're covering New York State. And they say different things. So, for example, I asked him the other day whether we all know he doesn't get along too well with Mayor de Blasio. Do you ever want to just, you know, punch him? Well, one young reporter says, how dare he ask that question? Well, I thought it was a funny question, and, you know, it got the kind of results that I wanted. And then, while much of this is going on, one of your colleagues, and very well respected at the Albany Times Union, Brendan Lyons, writes the following thing. Here's a thought from my colleagues in the LCA. Stop tweeting and reporting from New York Governor Cuomo's interviews with WAMC and other hand-selected outlets. Go silent. Call for more red rooms. Now, I get the guy's point. Believe me, I do, which is...
Just to clarify, is the governor's ceremonial office. That's where press conferences are held in the Capitol. When he has a big gathering of reporters to do press conferences, he yells in the red room. His father, when he was governor, held him in the so-called blue room, which is down the hall.
Right, and LCA is the Legislative Correspondents Association.
Yeah, the reporters who are based at the Capitol. So, anyway, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't interrupt. Just to clarify what the...
No, that was a good clarification. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a whole tweet storm on that. Some people agree. One person replies to him and says, what vision of journalism calls for withholding info from the audience? Context, yes, but most people are more interested in what the governor says than they are in a bunch of reporters' opinions about the lack of value. Well, the question I'm raising with all of you, is it appropriate? I know that at one point when I was interviewing the former Governor Cuomo, I heard from the esteemed reporter, Mickey Carroll, who said, we're coming into your interview with the governor. And I said, no, you're not. And he said, yes, we are. Basically, we're the New York Times. And then, and I wrote this in my book on Cuomo, and then the question was raised by me, well, will you let me into your exclusive interviews with the governor? When you're doing an editorial conference, for example, can I come in? And the answer is probably no, we know that. So I open it to the group to think of whether or not it's appropriate for somebody to tweet the other reporter saying, don't use stuff from WAMC.
Well, just to give it the 30,000-foot view, these reporters, you pick whatever word you want. They're upset, they're jealous, they're angry, perhaps rightly so, that the governor is only giving his interviews to you and a couple of other radio stations in the state, and they are not getting a chance to question him. Thus, they allege we should just simply not pay attention to what he says. Is that a fair characterization?
No.
Yeah, I think that's actually what it is, though I don't think that Brendan is serious about this. I think you're right that it's their frustration that the governor is avoiding the press that covers him every day. Brendan Lyons is not the kind of a reporter who is going to avoid covering the news. He's a man of great integrity. And so if there is news being made, he's not going to not do it. This is just, I think, a reporter's frustration that the governor is going. I think there are basically four radio stations that he enjoys doing this with. One out west, there's a guy on Long Island at commercial radio. There's Brian Lehrer at WNYC in New York and Alan Chartok at WAMC. So I think that the reporters who cover him every day are frustrated that he avoids them and instead does this. So I don't think, though, that anybody is seriously not going to cover
him. I'm glad you said that because I think it reflects poorly on him if, in fact, he was serious and is saying, let's not cover what the governor... You have to cover what the governor says no matter where it is.
I wish that Brendan had a chance with this, to tell you the truth, and reporters ought to be acting more in concert with one another, both in the state level and the national level. What he's really aiming at, it's not just their own frustration, it's changing the behavior of public officials who have learned that they can pick and choose when they talk and to whom and how and the whole setting, and that is not the way the system is supposed to work. It's not how it did work. And if reporters did stick together, they could change that behavior. If everyone walked out of the White House, out of those gaggles that have replaced press briefings, Trump would go crazy and he would reinstate them because he wants to be in the media. And the same with the governor. How come he gets to pick it? This is no reflection on WAMC. If Brendan Lyon were getting the exclusives, he would be taking them and knocking you out. That's the way the system works.
Exactly.
But wouldn't it be nice if we did all work together?
I don't think this is new, by the way. I mean, I remember famously when was Walter Cronkite mentioned here, when John F. Kennedy famously at Hyannisport did one-on-one interviews with Walter Cronkite. So he obviously had to have selected him. Like, why wasn't it one of the other networks?
And then the word you used in going on there before I heard, caught my ear when you said perhaps it's that they're jealous.
Yes.
And I sort of take that as being important. But I want to read it one more time. What he said to his fellow reporters were, stop tweeting reporting from New York State Governor Cuomo's.
He put the word interviews in quotes, the interviews with WAMC.
Yeah, right. Well, and what did you mean when you said he put it in quotes? Was that a put down or?
I presume so.
It's very good to be skeptical. He's an investigative reporter. He ought to be skeptical. Why is the governor picking you? That's a valid question. Yeah. And I think you can answer it, Alan. I'm not knocking WAMC, but I can't knock Brendan for this. He's
or
right.
WNYC in New York or, you know, a reporter on Long Island.
There is a different dynamic that comes when you have, like, you give him probably, your interviews will go about 20 minutes or something, don't
they?
Half an hour. Yep. Well, there's a very different dynamic in that kind of a conversation. As you say, you sometimes have fun with him, you sometimes banter, while in the midst asking, as you say, the toughest questions you can. But that's a different dynamic from in a press conference where you have this reporter asking this question and this reporter asking this. It is more pressure on the governor to face a press conference of reporters who know in detail.
Look, Rex, I get his point. Believe me, I get his point. I got it from the first time I looked at it, which is it would be good if he had press conferences. Nevertheless, I'm not looking him in the mouth. Or a gift horse. I am telling you that WAMC is flattered that they are picked out among a lot of others to receive these words. And as I have said, I ask him the toughest questions I can. I want to read it to you one more time.
I don't think you should be flattered, Alan.
Stop tweeting and reporting from the, quote, interviews with WAMC.
Okay, we've heard it three times now. I don't think you should be flattered that a politician is doing what he should, which is to be accountable to you. You should be as hard on him, as you say, as you can be. You shouldn't feel flattered that he's talking to you.
No.
Big deal.
I think it's great because it reflects well on the fact that WAMC is a very important news agency.
Okay.
What does the governor say when you ask him, why are you only talking to WAMC and not to the rest of the...
I don't know, but it's a good question.
It is a good question.
Ask him.
Ask him why he skips out in the press corps in the Capitol. Why isn't he making himself
available?
I'll
read this quote from Brendan Lyons.
That would be actually pretty interesting.
Yeah. Why is the governor not doing red rooms? But I do think that if I'm a politician, I much would prefer sitting and talking to you than talking to all the reporters in the Capitol. it is much more of a situation that he can control. You let him talk. You let him answer. And I think that's respectful, by the way. You know, you give him time to answer the question, whereas each reporter down in the press room is going to be jumping in to do, but wait a minute, Governor, and they're going to go on to their own questions.
Sure.
It's a harder thing for a politician to do.
Just, all of us remember that you are hearing now from Rex Smith, who was a major editor at the Times Union, and who was defending this thing, and from Rosemary, who is quite right, that we would all be better off.
Well, let's not misstate, Alan,
what
I've said or what I think Brendan is saying. And why don't you ask Brendan what he meant? Why don't you invite him to come on if you're so upset about it and explain it?
Upset.
You know,
who said upset? Number one, who said
upset? You're not upset?
No.
Well, you just took 10 minutes of the program to talk about it.
I have talked to Brendan Lyons in the past, and it hasn't always gone well. So let me just say I'm raising it because he did it, not me, Rex.
Well, I presume you're going to do fundraising on it, so that's fine, because, you know, we need to
God help us if we do fundraising, Rex.
I think you should.
You guys are mired in your jealousy over WAMC's successes, and why don't you
say
that?
I'm very happy that WAMC is successful. I think it's wonderful.
You're a part of it.
I love public radio, and I think it's just terrific. And I encourage you to hire investigative reporters who will do that kind of work.
Now, can I veer this? I'm going to veer this just slightly because it's sort of still a similar topic. I don't think you discussed it last week. Should the networks who were invited to go to the State of the Union off-the-record lunch with the president have boycotted that event because CNN was excluded?
I agree. That's what I was
referring to. Didn't.
The national level.
They didn't.
No, because they wanted to go in and get the scoop.
Right.
And they did get a scoop, so they were rewarded for being disloyal to other reporters.
So,
and this is not helping us.
Let's say that I'll use the word confer because that's a mild word, but would the networks who conferred with each other to make the decision to boycott, would they be looked upon poorly by the public at large, which doesn't want to see its media colluding with, or already believes the media colludes with each other?
Yeah, they already believe it.
So it wouldn't bother you.
We have lost so much ground under the Trump administration, and even a little bit under Obama, too, who did some of the same stuff. He picked and chose who and how he was going to communicate rather than be open to all. So we're seeing a downslide
here. If you were president, would you? No, would you pick and choose? Would you go where it was best for you?
Well, of course I would, but
okay.
Why does that mean that the media has to accept it?
No.
They're doing what they're supposed to. The media is acting dumb. They're doing it the old way and not changing, and they're losing as a result. They are losing out.
I would just say one more thing in Brendan Lyons' favor. He said that, but in the last several articles in the Times Union, WAMC has been quoted.
Well, of course. You know, when the governor speaks, often he makes news. And it's our job is to report the news. That's why I say this whole hullabaloo that you're raising here is, I think, not a serious matter. As I said from the get-go, I don't think Brendan is not going to cover something. Certainly the Times Union Capital Bureau, Brendan is the head of it, but there are other reporters there, are not going to fail to cover news if the governor says something.
But they're also right to point out that the governor is speaking only to his hand-picked mouthpiece.
Now, what about the print?
Wait a second. I take some real exception to the word mouthpiece. I am not his mouthpiece. And I take some real exception to that, Rosemary.
Well, hand-picked, whatever. Think of a word you don't find pejorative, but he is right to point it out.
Well, but you do admit it was pejorative, right?
Well, I see why you take it that way, Alan. Yes, you're obviously sensitive on this matter.
Cut it out.
So should the reporters for print newspapers be boycotting the session that even if every TV anchor from every 2-bit TV station in the world was invited, why weren't the print people represented at that off the record? And should they have boycotted?
That's a very good question.
I think they have their own event, though.
Do they?
Yeah, there's a separate one for print media where they invite in the top editors. Why are you having secret meetings with top White House people anyway?
Exactly. And why do presidents and governors pick oftentimes, let me go talk to the editors. Let's bring in the people in these roles who are not as well informed as the reporters.
Well, I attended a couple of Governor Mario Cuomo's dinners for the budget, and they would have them in the mansion. As you recall, in the old days, the governor would have a meeting in the morning for the legislature and then a meeting for the press. And then in the evening, newspaper executives were invited to go to the mansion for dinner. But prior to dinner, you sat through the governor's often lengthy and wordy budget presentation. Does that concern you? I found it interesting.
I was concerned.
Because you were not invited. No, I don't mean that.
In fact, I was invited, and I didn't go.
Because?
Because I didn't think it was right. I just didn't think so. We have a news operation. We would do it. I did not go. And I didn't go for a reason. Now, of course, I interviewed him all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I found that it was interesting because I wasn't regularly exposed to the governor, and to hear it firsthand and hear him describe his presentation was enlightening for me.
But here's the difficulty. I worked for a publisher who was invited to one of those things and who was seated next to the governor's communications director, Zenya Mukha. Yeah. She was the communications director
for
George Pataki. And so they're having dinner together, and my publisher turned to her and said, "So what do you do for the governor?" So this is how out of touch, you know, the publisher might be to not know that this was the governor's communication director.
I think all of these events, the correspondence dinners and the White House dinners and these off-the-record little chummy things where you rub elbows with the powerful are way out of date. We need to stop them. They're dangerous. It's all part of the effort to control the message coming out. It has to do with why we now don't speak to people directly. We speak to PR people.
Oh.
There's a filter everywhere.
Oh, and you don't get to the PR people.
No.
They send you emails.
Exactly.
So much of journalism is now done via email. It's just unbelievable. You get a statement.
So I would ask all of you, you get a message from the governor's top person who says, "Can we come in and talk just to you?" You would say no?
I would say yes. I wouldn't turn him down. Absolutely. Because you get the actual governor or you get the commissioner. That's why I think your congressional corner is a good thing, which you do. You interview members of Congress directly. You're not getting just canned statements from their press office. So that's a good thing. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that the reporters' rank and file shouldn't be pushing for more access.
So what you see is that if he had called me, I would do the same exact thing. We all would. And that's exactly why it's so insidious, because the governor's people have figured out the weakness, the competitive weakness in the American media system, and they're exploiting it.
You know, there's a convicted felon named Elaine Calieros. And one of the reasons I've always admired you, Rosemary, is that you went in and had an individual interview with him. Remember that?
Yep.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
He was the president of SUNY Polytech. And what did you do with him?
Nothing. I wanted to ask questions in the media. He was on Facebook. He was on social media, but not a whole lot in the newspaper. The Buffalo News changed all that, of course. And I did not get very much out of it. He had PR people there. It was a whole show. It was like a play.
So did he have his
stage?
So did he? And I mean this in only the best of professional senses. Did he have his way with you?
I did not get what I wanted from that. So yeah,
you were
representing with him too. Yeah. Every time that I would interview him, I didn't get.
He would deflect it. I mean, from the minute you walked in, he has you seated in a room. He's not there, and then he makes an entrance, and it was like being on the deck of the Starship Enterprise. He loves Star Trek. You could hear all the music playing as he comes out. From that, and the PR people who are all these delicious, beautiful blondes. So
the time is up. I'm afraid we have to let it go at that. Very interesting program today. We are grateful to Rosemary Romeo and Alan Shartok, of course, and Ira Fussfeld, and I'm Rex Smith. Thanks to our producer, David Gustina, and to you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.